Hello, everyone. Welcome to Pistons versus Everybody, the Detroit Pistons podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm your host, Lazarus Jackson. And tonight I'm being joined by Nicholas Henkel of the Bun and Cardigan podcast and the Detroit Pistons Twitter champion. What's up, Nick?
It's so funny that you introduced me like that, because it was at halftime, actually. I was letting my dog out and I thought to myself, I'm not on a lot of shows, but the one show that I was on a few months ago, I asked them to introduce me as the Pistons Twitter champion because I was really excited about it. And since then, I'm the only one who ever brings that up. So thank you very much for doing that. that was great.
It's in the bio. Like, yes! If I don't know what to introduce you as, I just steal from your Twitter bio. I assume that's like what you want to show to the world. So. Yeah. And well-deserved, honestly.
Yeah. You know, it was crazy because it was literally during that same train of thought that I had, that I was thinking about the fact that, you know, this is a really convoluted train of thought, so I'll get it out quick, but how the Detroit Pistons are unfollowing a bunch of fans. And I thought to myself, if they ever do that to me, hey, man, I was the reason that Blake Griffin gave away a signed jersey. I was the reason that Luke Kennard gave away a pair of signed shoes on my way to winning the Pistons Twitter championship. So I hope that my good deeds don't go unnoticed, and I hope that they continue to follow me. But also, again, phenomenal introduction.
No, you absolutely are deserving of it. I think the Pistons Twitter account followed me at one point. They don't currently. Oof. I'm not going to get tied up about it because, it's not that big.
Well, I don't particularly care. I'm not getting as bent out of shape about it if it does happen the way that everybody else is. I'm going to flip the script a little bit. I have a question for you.
Shoot.
And it's Pistons related. Don't worry.
Okay.
I believe it was literally this morning you had tweeted that you were kind of hoping for some sort of an update on Killian. It had been 2 weeks and you're like, hey, kind of weird. We haven't heard anything. Sure enough, just within a few hours, the Pistons release a statement and they're like, hey, 8 weeks, we're going to reevaluate. He's going to rehab a little bit. So you called that, right? You willed that into existence. What I'm asking, since apparently you have powers, is give me something kind of small and trivial about the Pistons that you would like to speak into existence next. Like, give us something.
I would like DeLon Wright to take like 15 shots in the game. See what happens.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Like, I like that one.
Just, and not like every night, obviously, because, but one game, just like, let's get the like 28 point, 17 shot DeLon Wright night.
Sure.
Like, why not? I think that would be fun.
Now, what's dangerous is that actually might happen now, and people are going to lose their minds because that won't be very fun. But it also could be like, but there's a world in which there is like the reason. I don't remember. I think there was a game earlier this year. DeLon Wright puts up 18, 5-5, and I said that he had like the most. DeLon Wright played the most Jahlil Okafor of Bobby Portis games in the NBA tonight. What I was getting at is like, I don't remember who coined the phrase, but the any given night all-stars. I think DeLon Wright is probably on that team. I think Jahlil Okafor is on that team. I think Bobby Portis is on that team. Guys who are going to give you a stellar performance, one night.
Randomly,
right? Like every 14 days, they'll have that game. And then for the next 14 days, you're mad at them perpetually, but you're kind of coasting off of that. Well, remember when he gave us 18, 5-5 until it happens again, and then you're back on the DeLon Wright train. So if he's putting up 15 shots in a game, there's that room for like, this might be his night. So you kind of live with it.
Yeah. Anybody with like more than like 3 or 4 videos of on Down to Buck in the same season, like belongs on that list.
Yeah, absolutely.
When Reggie Bullock exploded the year with Blake, like when he was first breaking out,
sure,
he was like, he got like 5 videos in a row. It was like, oh, like, hey, like Reggie Bullock's play well, and I know because he's got like 6 Down to Buck videos for no reason.
They are a great way to kind of brush up on players that you don't know a lot about.
Exactly.
And I always really appreciate that. Like, sorry, my dog's barking, someone's walking around outside. Once Dylan Windler comes back for Cleveland, I think he's going to have a lot of clips on there, and I'm really excited for that. Also, shout out to Colin Sexton, but that's it. Just big Dylan Windler guy. Just wanted to give him a shout out.
No, yeah, absolutely. We should probably talk about tonight's game.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about tonight's game? Actually, it's not like it was super fun.
No, I mean, here's what I'll say. I believe that was Detroit's third overtime game this season. We played one against Cleveland. We lost that one. I don't recall what the next one was, but there was definite. Oh, it was Phoenix, I think.
Yes.
I think it was Phoenix.
That was a win. Yeah,
That was a win. And then tonight against Atlanta. I think you said it. I think I just saw you tweeted it. I just don't like us going to overtime because I don't enjoy watching this team for more than 48 minutes. Right? Like it's funny, but I'm dead serious. Like I get to the end of the fourth quarter and like I just kind of want it to be over. If they were going to lose, I kind of would have preferred that they would have done it in regulation. The manner with which they did it is obviously frustrating, completely giving up. I think running a zone, the reason that it's obviously so effective is because we have a lot of guys who can't move very well defensively, but it also it allows you to hide Blake as best as you can. And it works, right? And Casey, I think, mentioned, I think it was maybe last week, that it also allows them to communicate more effectively. And I think that was on display for the most part. It felt like in the first half along the perimeter. Obviously, we were getting eaten alive inside by Capella and Collins. I think Clint Capella ended up getting, what, like 26 and 23, something ridiculous. John Collins went for like 30 and 10. You know, and then in the second half, it was Trae Young who had 21 in the third. And maybe it was just me not paying attention, but did it feel like the quietest 21 and a quarter you've ever seen?
Well, that's what happens when you shoot a lot of free throws. Those add up quickly, sure. Right? It doesn't feel like he scored 20 because he's not like dropping bombs on people's faces. Like when he made that 30 footer in overtime to kind of seal things away, put him up, what, six, I think, with like a minute
it was
to go.
Six. Yep.
Yeah. It's like that was like the first like, holy crap, like Trae Young, like highlight moment of the night, as far as I can like think of.
And it was a shot that he had actually taken earlier in the game. And it felt like it was even further back than the one that he actually made. And I was watching the Hawks broadcast and Dominic Wilkins was beside himself. He was furious that Trae Young would take that shot. And also like Plumlee gets met at the rim three times tonight. You know, he's kind of on this trajectory where it's like, I don't know by the end of his 3 years, because I imagine he'll probably play out, if not all 3 years of his contract, I'd say a good 75% of it. I don't know where Pistons fans are going to be with him by the end of it, because and I think it was James Edwards actually that pointed this out. I think we were all kind of thinking it, but the guy is so good at making shots when he's not looking at the rim. Like whether it's like the no look dunks, you know, like from right under the rim, or if it's like he hit a reverse layup tonight, which was wild. Sometimes he's kind of flashy with his passes, and overall he's just a really smart basketball player. He honestly is. But then he is kind of slow, like on his dunks. He kind of takes off a little bit too far from the basket, so it allows defenders to sort of make up for it, right? It feels like he gets swatted a lot. Do you kind of get what I'm saying? Like, I'm really curious to see where this relationship goes with Plumlee. And I said that, I enunciated that really weird. Moving forward, and I think tonight was perfectly indicative of that, because he certainly had his moments, but more often than not, it felt like it was kind of like, oh, Mason Plumlee. I don't know.
Yeah, he's not as bouncy as I was hoping he was. Like, he'll finish lobs, but, like, he's only finishing open lobs. Like, he's not dunking on people. Well, he had the nice dunk on Bam. That was pretty nice.
Yes.
But, like, that was nice because we had literally never seen anything like that in the previous 13 games that they've played. And sure. It's going to take another 25 games before he busts something out like that again. And so, yeah, I mean, I think he'll be all right. Right. He was signed to be a perfectly adequate, average starting level center. I think he will fulfill that role. And like, hopefully 2-3 years down the line, you are able to find somebody honestly, probably better than he will be when he's 33 or whatever.
Sure.
And so it's less of a hassle, right?
Yeah. You know, in terms of, I think, positive notes about tonight, I think it goes without say it was, I'd say for the better part of regulation, it was probably the best showing that we've seen from Blake, athletically speaking, or like movement wise. I don't know how to articulate it, but there were two possessions. One of them really excited me. One of them baffled me. Both were in the second half. Both took place actually on the left wing. The one that excited me was Blake Griffin catches the ball on the left wing, and he gets John Collins to bite on a pump fake, and he waits for him to come down, and then he starts posting him up, right? He takes him to the elbow, takes a few steps in. He's in the lane, and he hits John Collins with an up and under, and it actually went in. And it was Blake Griffin scoring just makes me smile. Like, just seeing the ball go in for him just makes me smile. And it felt like that was a really strong Blake Griffin post up, starting from the 3-point line and actually working his way to the rim. And it looked really solid. The one that upset me was, once again, from the left wing, catches the ball, and he has a really good look from three with a closing Trae Young on the move. So it was like, take the shot right now. He doesn't. And then he starts to post up Trae Young and then settles for an 18-foot fall away shot, which obviously rims out. And that kind of bothered me. But for the most part, would you agree that the way that Blake was moving, it felt like his elevation was kind of there as well? Obviously, people have been, dogging him to start the season, but Casey pointed it out, and Omari and Rod and James are kind of the echo chamber. Like, the guy didn't play for a year, and he has a completely new role with this team, and it was always going to take him a little bit of time to get reacclimated to the situation. We saw it a little bit in Miami. I think he's finally starting to get there.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't bring up the and one, which was also
Left block, right? Yes, the up and under. Yeah,
the up and under and one, where it looked like is like initially it's like, oh crap, Blake's finally going to dunk because he hasn't had a dunk this year. Because it was only Trae Young in the way. And it's like, oh crap, John Collins is like coming from help from the weak side. This is going to end poorly. And then he like flips the up and under, gets the and one. I think that was one of only 14 points they scored in the fourth quarter, but it was still pretty nice. FSD immediately like tweets out the highlight because they know that like anything Blake Griffin hits. And it's like, oh, okay. Like, hey, good things still happen when Blake is willing to attack the rim aggressively and like put his body on the line.
Sure.
It's just like, will he make the conscious decision to do that all the time? And the answer appears to be no. And I really can't blame him.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. And I guess maybe this isn't as much of a victory as I would like it to be. It still feels and looks like he's engaged with this team. You get that sense too, right? Like
absolutely.
The fire is still there. I think it would be very easy for him to just kind of check out, right? But it's nice to know that he's still going to be there for us in the ways that he can. It always is just sort of a matter of like, and I mean this in the most respectful way possible, like, can you still play? Like, is it still there? And like I kind of mentioned a minute ago, obviously he had such a long layoff without playing proper organized ball. And it slowly feels like it's starting to come back. It breaks my heart. Like it really genuinely does.
Yeah. No, I actually wanted to ask you about this. Like, you bill yourself more as like a fan than a guy who like sits down and like, analyzes like every single aspect of what's going on.
Sure.
You're known more for like your passion and like the post game videos. So like, but that also gives you a lot of insight into what fans are thinking, right? Like you get a lot of reply guys like telling you like what they're thinking about what's going on with the Pistons.
Yeah.
So something that I've noticed in my reply guys is just like zero sympathy for Blake, considering that like we know essentially he donated his left leg to the playoff run. Yeah. And you can't help but wonder, like, you can't help but think, like, that's part of the reason why he looks the way he does now. So why do you think fans, like, don't have any sympathy or don't have more sympathy for Blake right now?
Well, the NBA, and I guess it's maybe not exclusive to the NBA. I think it's really the four major sports, but it's a what have you done for me lately business, right? So Pistons fans haven't seen Blake do anything quote unquote productive in terms of what their expectations are for him since April of 2018, right? Like it's really been that long. He came back preseason last year. No, didn't come back until I think game number 10 of last year and played what a month. And it clearly wasn't there. we haven't seen Blake be the Blake that we thought we were getting, or, you know, that we saw him transcend into in a considerably long time. And I think people are longing for that. And it's been such a tremendous amount of time that I think there's almost some resentment, it feels like. And I think, you know, like you said, there's no sympathy whatsoever. Like, there are some pretty vile things said about him and Derrick Rose, depending on how he plays. Like, I know I'm not going to name names, but there are people on Pistons Twitter who, you know, one night it'll be like, Derrick Rose is amazing. And then the next night they're like, get this bum off my team. And it's not exclusive to Pistons Twitter, right? Everybody has it. If you feel offended by that, then if the shoe fits, I guess. But it's pretty frustrating, and especially for Blake. And if I can get away with a shameless plug, as you mentioned at the top, James Edwards and I of The Athletic, our friendly neighborhood beat writer, and I started a podcast, and we actually talked about it. I should probably name the podcast, The Bun and Cardigan Show. We actually talked about it in the most recent episode. You know, how quickly they forget about what Blake Griffin did for us. And like you just said, he really did, like, play himself into a situation where we're having this conversation of, can he physically play basketball? Like, can he do this for another 5 years? And I guess that's even the question that I have for you now is, in 5 years, like, where do you think Blake Griffin is?
I wondered. I talked to James about this a little bit prior to the season started, so we, you know, we hadn't seen him at all. And I still think Blake can be a, like, Paul Millsap type,
sure,
for a good team. You securely lock down, like, 25 minutes of solid offense. Blake's still a really, really good passer, right? And the passing will never age because, you know, you don't have to move to be able to pass.
Sure.
I can definitely see him having a role as, like, anchoring a bench lineup offensively. In that way, it covers for him defensively. Like, bench lineups, like, don't have the talent to stretch him out and make him move and pick and rolls and stuff. You won't get killed that way. But, like, again, that's a bench guy on a good team. Like, he can do that for a while, sure. But the Pistons are a bad team, and he is not coming off the bench. And so, like, he is not in what I think his, like, ultimate destiny in the NBA, like, lies in right now. And so that's rough on him, because that's a mental adjustment, right? He's Blake MFing Griffin.
Sure.
Right? Like, it's got to be really hard to mentally come to a place where you're just, like, in a different stage of your career. And it happened, it doesn't feel like it happened overnight, but it happened, like, over the course of a year, and you couldn't play organized basketball for, what, like, 10 out of the 10 months out, yeah, of that year. So, you know, you're just now discovering this yourself. And he still got, you know, $39 million left on the final year of that contract. It's like he had, did you read the New York Times profile that he had?
That man's gone.
Yeah.
And you know what? And I'm sorry. That's my answer of yes. That's my way of saying yes. I did read it. You know, I read it and he never really explicitly said, like, yeah, I'm going to leave Detroit because, right, I want to win.
But it's not even like he's like, I hate Detroit. It sucks, right, here. Like, it's more like, this isn't what I saw for myself at this, right, stage in my life.
Right. And that's okay. You can't be mad at him right there about that, right? Like, you can't slight him for sort of having the presence of mind to, you know, self analyze or, you know, just look at, like you just said, where you are in your career and think, like, I have kind of, I think the quote was something to the effect of, like, I've done the accolades thing. Like, I want to do the winning part of it now. And that's, I think, where, I don't remember who I had this conversation with, but the question kind of comes up. You look at this free agency class coming up, and Blake Griffin has a player option. Now, smart money may say, what's his player option worth? It's like 40 million, right? I think you just said 30. Yeah, 39 million. Smart money would be on him probably picking that up, because that's a lot of money. But I look at it like, you know, because the free agency class went from, like, oh, wow, 2021 is actually pretty good, to, oh, all these guys signed extensions, now it's not that great. Do you just kind of think of the Gordon Hayward situation a little bit? Whereas, like, he had all this guaranteed money, it was almost a no-brainer that he was going to re-sign and, or, you know, pick it up in Boston. And then he, you know, I'm blanking on what word I'm looking for, but he looked at his situation and decided he wanted to continue to bet on himself. And the whole Boston thing was a train wreck from what, 2 minutes into its opening.
Yeah.
In Cleveland. And it was just never the same. And because it was such a lackluster market, Gordon Hayward's kind of a premier name on this market, right? And Charlotte's able to pay him all this money and go get him. Sort of like the way that Phoenix tried to in 2017 originally. I'm sorry, 2016 originally. No, it was 17. They were going to pay Blake like $201 million before the Clippers, you know. So then you look at Blake Griffin in this upcoming class. I hope this is making some sense.
No, it absolutely does.
And
especially after all the extensions and signed and stuff, like you said.
Right. I just think, you know, is Blake Griffin a premier name? Well, speaking relatively in this upcoming market, he kind of is a little bit. The problem is that a team that can actually, you know, built structured to win now probably won't have the money for him. So he won't be getting the, you know, Gordon Hayward sized contract that he got. But the principle of it, I think, is still there. And I'd be really curious to see if it happens. And if it does, I do not think anybody can be mad. I truly don't think. And people can be like, well, you could have traded him if you knew you're going to. What were you going to get for him? I mean, really, what do you think you were going to get for Blake? If he opts out, I'm not mad about it. You know, if he opts in. Yeah, I know people were having comments, and I know I'm talking a lot here, Laz. I'm sorry. I know this is your show.
No, but, you're fine.
You know, I know that, and I apologize. I don't remember who it was. Somebody was saying that they think the odds are stronger that Blake Griffin re-signs in Detroit than anything else. And at the time, I kind of thought to myself, I don't think that's insane. And then, Laz, as you said, the New York Times story, which was actually really interesting. Like, I was really interested in all of it. I think that it was probably, what, like three or four weeks ago that came out. But, yeah, I don't know. If, you know, when and if he leaves, I will have nothing but love for him forever.
No, absolutely. No one's going to remember the bad times when Blake leaves.
Right.
I think the thing, like, I have also thought about the Gordon Hayward like opting out and taking some money player option thing. Al Horford also did that.
Yep.
2 summers ago now. So like there is a precedent. It has happened before. Al Horford, I think, was older than Blake is now at the time that occurred. Gordon Hayward also kind of on the back half of his career. So it's not unheard of, but yeah, I think it's trickier because Blake is making more than those guys were, it's going to be harder for him to make up like the gap in like potential earnings.
Sure.
He's going to make $39 million that final year. I don't know if he gets offered. He could get offered like 4 years, like, you know, or 3 years, like $50 million. Right. Is that $11 million enough over the course of 3 years? Right. I don't know.
I think it's circumstantial, right? What if he ends up in, I'm just throwing it. What if he ends up in Denver? Would he do that? Would you take that significant, that sizable pay cut if you're playing in a team like Denver? What if it's Phoenix? Let's change it to Phoenix.
Oh, that'd be interesting. Reunite with CP3.
Exactly. Maybe they, I don't know. Maybe they, I don't remember what Saric's contract looks like right now, but let's say they lose him for whatever reason. And then they want to replace him with Blake. You know, what's that look like? And then, like I mentioned before, Phoenix was sort of the front runner all along. Before he ended up re-signing in LA and then subsequently getting traded to Detroit, like Phoenix was the team that he was going to go to anyways. So yeah, reuniting with CP and then going back to Phoenix, like the pay cut I think is going to be circumstantial to the team. To the team and to the situation. I don't totally think it's a foregone conclusion that he does come back just because like that is a lot of money. You know what I mean? Like you're still going to be a free agent the following year. I think that there's so much that you have to take into consideration. Obviously, if you're Blake, I think if he gets hurt again, God forbid, if something happens to him again, I think he'll opt in. But if he goes into the offseason healthy, I'd expect him to opt out.
Yeah, and you know, thinking about that, that could be part of the reason why we're seeing him take it easy a lot of these nights. It would mean a lot for him to go into this offseason perfectly healthy. Yeah. As healthy as you could be after a full season of work. And I'm sure that we will see his minutes load decrease as the season goes on, just because the desire to like start strong or like stay competitive will be less so in like May than it is right now. I have to believe that.
Yeah. You know, this is something that James and I don't think we said it on a show. I think we were just talking privately about
it. Here we go. Fresh stuff. Let's go.
I think it's something that we've even since both of us have since tweeted. So I don't, it's not that interesting, but maybe if I'm misremembering or if, you know, you didn't see it, you know, you got to play Blake and Derek now so that teams know that they're tradable and that, you know, there's actually something to acquire with them. And you know, if that ends up being the case, which I think the odds are probably 1,000,000 to 1 that both of them get moved. But in a world, in an alternate timeline where they do both get traded, both Blake and Derek, you're going to stop complaining pretty quick when you get the Sekou, Sadiq Bey, Killian Hayes, Isaiah Stewart, Svi lineup that you've wanted all along, right? Because at that point, like, all bets are off. It's chaos in Detroit and everyone's going to love it. Or at least they think they will.
Yeah.
People put a lot of stock in lineups with sub 23-year-olds. I promise you it's not good basketball. You want to know why Dwayne Casey played vets tonight in overtime? Because they wanted to win the game. There's a reason Sadiq's not playing a lot in these last few games. It's because he's kind of coming back down to earth a little bit. That's it. Like, he earned his minutes, and that's why he was playing as much as he did. He even started, what, 2 or 3 games, I think. Was closing pretty much all of them. And then all of a sudden he wasn't
shooting. Phoenix game.
Right.
Played really well in the Phoenix game.
Yep. And then all of a sudden he's not shooting 45% from three anymore, which was an anomaly in and of itself. But now he's kind of starting to come back down to like 33%. It's like, okay, well, let's get some other bodies out there. Right. Right. I do understand the frustration of like, why does Svi only come in like halfway through the third? Like, why doesn't he play the first half? That part I empathize with people a lot there. I don't really get that part at all.
Well, the thing initially was like, why is Wayne starting, right? Because no one projected Wayne to play serious minutes for this team, like going into the season, even after all the roster restructuring and wheeling and dealing happened. And so like, you figured Svi would be in that spot. You figured Sadiq would be in that spot. You figured Josh Jackson would be in that spot. And all those guys have kind of, you know, at times.
Lineup roulette. Casey's figuring it out, man.
Yeah. But like, Wayne Ellington is playing so well.
Yeah.
That it's I tweeted this during the game. He's playing so well, it's hard not to play him.
Not to play him, yeah.
Yeah. And he's one of the few guys who has like pre-existing chemistry with Blake, which is pretty important. Like, I don't know if you've seen these, like, there was like a Sadiq Blake DHO that like went terribly against, probably against Miami. And I was just like, yeah, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you bring up dribble handoffs. Here's a question. Can we see something other than that or pick and rolls? Can we maybe get, let's throw out a horn set, run some flares.
I've been encouraged by the creativity they show in getting Jeremy Grant the ball.
I agree with that.
They were running some flare stuff for Jeremy Grant tonight, tweeted about that. There were obvious times earlier in the game, not in the fourth quarter, which is very frustrating, earlier in the game where they were like, oh, hey, Solomon Hill is guarding you. Just like, go at that dude. He's like, okay. And he did, right? And to great value. Jeremy scored all 9 points in overtime. Yeah. The Atlanta Hawks scored more than 9 points in overtime. But you see the versatility of his offensive like repertoire. And they have to keep taking advantage of that. But other guys like don't have that versatility, right? Blake can't score off flare screens.
Right. No, for sure.
D-Rose doesn't score off flare screens.
Like, sure. I don't disagree 100%. And I think, you know, one of my favorite things, I don't even know if I think it's really easy to sort of have this like retrospective view of it where I loved it so much. The reality, I think, is that it actually made me mad more often than not. But if the ball went in, I loved it. 2018, 2019, Blake Griffin, right? The Blake that we all came to know and love. He would always fake dribble handoffs and then like along the in the corners, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he would do those step backs. And it was always infuriating. Like, I thought it was a bad shot every single time. But if it went in, I was like, okay. Here's a little fun fact. Here's something that you don't know. Here's a conversation I can let you in on. This was, I don't know how many months ago. Luke Kennard was still a Piston. So that's how, just take that. That's obviously within the last few years. But it was within the last year. I was talking to Luke. And I go, what is it like getting a dribble handoff from Blake? And he's like, it's amazing. He's literally like the best screener I've ever played with. I go, when he fakes it, like, do you know, like, do you guys kind of like talk a little bit, and on the opposite end, Blake's like, hey, I'm going to fake this, you know, do this, do that. And Luke's like, I literally never knew. Like, he faked me on it. If it was like, I was always genuinely faked, and then he would obviously step back. I thought that was really interesting. You know, getting that insight, and like, he's like, people don't understand like how good Blake is, just sort of as a playmaker when you're one of his teammates. So I thought that that was really interesting. Obviously always had great things to say about Blake, but I think about that all the time. Whenever I see Blake do a DHO, I always think of that conversation.
I mean, that's fun insight that, like, you know, I wasn't talking to Luke. I didn't know that. So
yeah, I got stories. I got a lot of stories, but I can't tell them all on here.
No, you got to save some for your podcast. Yeah. I mean, speaking of your podcast, I actually legitimately wanted to ask you about this.
Sure.
What made you like want to do a podcast with James? Like, obviously there's chemistry there, but you signed yourself up for like twice a week content. Yeah. Like, what made you want to do that?
So, there are a few things. So we did talk about it at the start of our inaugural episode, which dropped again on Monday. We will have another episode dropping. What day is today? Wednesday? This Friday, this upcoming Friday, we'll have another one. But so I hosted a show called Shoot the J for about a year. Technically, it was like 3 years, but I wasn't on Apple. I used to only be on SoundCloud. It's a long story.
We've all been there when like, yeah, you're first starting your podcast. Yeah, I get
you. You like don't know where to distribute it. Yeah, you can't get on Apple. You can't. So for like the last year, I was hosting, you know, Shoot the J by myself, real, you know, quick hitter episodes, because I value people's attention and I know that people don't want to listen to it. Like, I work very hard to get it for 2 minutes and 20 seconds on Twitter, and I barely get that. So,
yeah, I'm gonna stop you. Like, now I'm gonna interrupt you and take over my own podcast to compliment you. Like, people don't know like how hard those 2 minute videos are to like make.
Yeah.
Like, the thought of trying to do one of those like consistently like terrifies me. Like, I would have no idea what to do. This is so much more structured than that. And like, also, like, I don't know anything about video. You gotta learn video stuff, right? Yeah. Like, it's what you do is so hard. And I don't think people understand that until they try.
They don't.
So like, yes, yeah, absolutely. And
I have a lot of opinions on it. Like, I don't want to say it because it's going to be mean, but yeah, no, I genuinely thank you. Cause it's very chaotic. You know, whenever I record, like, sometimes it'll literally take me like 10 takes, like no joke. Because if I stutter once, like, that's a few seconds that I actually need. Cause 2 minutes and 20 right. seconds is not a lot of time to talk about 48 minutes of basketball. Right. So, no.
And I want people to think about that, right? Like, you're literally taking like 20 minutes to record a 2 minute video. Yeah. Perfectly.
Yeah,
that's like, hard.
It's freaking hard. And the worst part is when you cover the Pistons and people don't care because we lost the game and so it gets like 50 likes and you put all this work in and it's like whatever. So anyways, I know my stories always run long, but anyways, so I randomly asked James to come on my show last February, because he had quote tweeted one of my recaps and I really appreciated it. For some reason, I had a lot of courage to ask a beat writer to come on my show, someone who didn't know who I was. And he did. And it was weird. Like, it felt like we were, you know, like actual friends, like we knew each other for a while. Like, we had a great conversation over the next few months, you know, over the hiatus of the league and the, you know, throughout the pandemic. I had James on a few more times. You know, we exchanged numbers. We did have a conversation that I don't know if I'm allowed to share it. So I can't, but it led to us starting the show. Maybe Laz, maybe I could tell you that when we get off the.
No. Okay.
I don't know if I can say it. So, you know, we had been trying to get this show to work for months and months and months, And it just kind of, it was never the right time. It never materialized. We just always had such great conversations that, you know, we knew it would work. And James was always really big on this idea of, you know, having a beat writer have their own show, but the co-host is a fan, right? Because then it's two worlds collide and, you know, they can kind of feed each other, each side's perspective. Now, I think generally I tend to fall, even though I sort of, I guess, portray myself as a fan, I think generally I'm more rational than that. And I think James and I agree on pretty much everything. Laz, I think you and I agree on almost everything because it's like a super rudimentary thing. Like, I know that 23-year-old lineups don't work, right? Like, the Memphis Grizzlies were an anomaly. Like, the kids are fun, but like, we got to have some vets. You know, like things like that, right?
Right.
So just to like, literally our first episode dropped on Monday. It was like last Thursday that James and I called James out of the blue and was like, hey, do you want to do this thing? And he's like, yes. And so we threw together our promo video, did all this stuff, and just a few days later recorded and pushed it out. We just, we knew people would really enjoy it. And, we know that we have a lot of interesting things to say. And obviously James has some stories and some nuggets that he's not going to write in stories, but he knows that people will appreciate. So that's my very long-winded way of telling you why we started the show.
No, I am a subscriber.
Yes.
I am a listener. It was a great show. I'm looking forward to more.
Thank you.
I got to ask, walk me through like the idea meeting for the opening video.
Dude.
Right. Cause that was legit. That was, dude, that was really good.
So, my girlfriend and I, we had to run some errands downtown. So for those of you who don't know, I live in Chicago. So we had to go like downtown, like on Michigan Avenue, right? We had to do some stuff, and, we're driving down there and James texts me and we had just gotten off the phone like an hour before. And we had agreed that we were going to do this. He had to get clearance like from The Athletic that he was allowed to do a podcast outside of The Athletic. So we were just waiting on that. We got the confirmation.
That was another question I was going to ask
offline.
Was like, what's the actual like affiliation
so
for this? But yeah,
that's we can, we'll talk about that later. We'll again, I don't want to say anything, but
that's a little inside baseball. Like, I don't know if they care about that.
Yeah. yeah, I guess maybe people don't, but anyways, he goes, dude, I need to call you like right now. I have an amazing idea. He's like, do you have 2 seconds? I go, we got to park and then I'll call you. So I'm like walking down Michigan Avenue and he calls me. He's like, I got this great idea. He's like, it's a promo video. Like, it's going to be awesome. And he literally, it was all his idea. He's like, my sister, I'm so sorry. I don't remember what her major was, but she's like a film major. She just graduated. Just like, record you doing this, and this, send it to me. She's going to throw it together. It's going to be perfect. It was literally, I don't want to take any credit for it. It was all James's idea. It was incredible. Little fun fact. So there was the one clip for those of you, I don't want to alienate people who haven't seen it, but for those who have, there's like the side by side of James and I each tying our shoes, right? When we get out of bed. Fun fact. I was going to put on my white cement Jordan 3s, right? Cause like those are amazing, but it's a Pistons podcast. So I was like, I'm going to get shelled if I throw on some Jordans for a Pistons show. Right. But yeah, it was literally just James really excitedly calling me, telling me he had the idea. And I forget that like, he's a writer. Like, this is his job, is to be creative, and to get to work with that has been incredible so far.
Yeah, man. That's a great story. B, that brings me back to some of the internet arguments I've seen about how the Pistons shouldn't have the Jumpman logo on their jerseys.
I have a hot take about that.
What's your hot take about that?
I'm sorry, I keep cutting you off. You can finish it if you like. I just want to say go for it. It doesn't matter. Who cares?
It literally doesn't matter.
Okay, I'm glad we're on the same page because literally, who cares?
It's like, guys, Blake is a Jumpman athlete.
Yeah. So like, is Jeremy, by the way.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's wearing the 3s today.
See, I'm not a shoe guy. Like, I can identify a pair of J's, but like, that's it.
Yeah, James and I, that's one of the other things we have in common, is we're really good at sneaker talk. We're really good at music talk. There's a guest that we might have on soon, hopefully, that may blow people's minds, and I'll leave it at that, but it has to do with music. So, but yeah, I see it in people. people get all mad that it's like, oh, like I know Jordan, like Jordan won this, like he after all the, you know, the battles they had, Jordan finally won. And it's like, I could not care less.
It's like, guys, that was 40 years ago.
Yeah, I was 10 years away from being born. I don't care.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to say is like, see, it's like the shot of you like tying the hair into the bun. It's just like, genius.
Again, his idea. I don't want to claim any creative like direction there. It was literally all him. The name of the show, which he tried to, like, he thought it was me that came up with it. It was literally him that came up with it. The bun and cardigan show, that was all James. The promo video, all James. Here's a fun fact. I James might get mad at me for telling you guys this. So keep it on the down low. Everybody listen to this. Don't tell James this.
James doesn't listen to this podcast. It's fine.
We could say anything we want about James. The track that we play at the beginning of every episode and the one that we're going to play at the end of every episode, which is going to change every episode, but the intro is always going to be the same. It's the one that we played in the video. James made both of those beats. Now, people don't know that about James because he doesn't like people knowing about it, but he's really, really good. And we've sent each other back and forth, like just some music that we work on. And here's another fun fact. James sent me a beat one time, like 2 months ago, and I actually recorded a song with it. So I don't know if I'm ever going to release that, but there's a little fun fact for people who are listening.
Nick, I wish you could see my eyes right now.
Is that a good surprise? Is that a good fun fact?
My eyes are so wide. Yeah. I'm like, I need to hear this song.
I don't think people would like it is the thing. It's I don't know that they would. I think that I don't want them to think it's some like Pistons themed song. No, it's like an angsty 22-year-old song.
Well, so you know Shamik, right?
Sure, yeah.
You know Shamik DJs, right?
I do know that. Yeah, he's quite good. I listen to his mixes on SoundCloud.
His SoundCloud mixes are really, really good.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So I think there's room for everybody to kind of flower and be more than just like a Pistons fan and still be part of like Pistons Twitter.
Sure.
And still be under the umbrella. Like, I don't know.
We do have a lot of musicians in Pistons Twitter. Jordan, Pistons Thoughts, he's one.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's got some tracks on Apple Music. And then what is Detroit Kool-Aid? I'm pretty sure he also, I think it's him. I'm going to feel really bad if I'm wrong. Somebody else does. But I don't remember who. But we got some musicians. It's real. Again, keep the James thing on the down low, everybody. Don't flood his mentions with it because he doesn't like people knowing for some reason, even though he's really good.
Let's talk about like the actual Pistons.
Sure.
For 2 seconds. So we talked a little bit about Killian earlier. I didn't really get your thoughts on the whole Killian thing. How are you feeling about knowing that Killian's A, not going to get surgery, B, out for at least the next 8 weeks, and C, it's not like it's not a hip strain. Right. It's not like a labral tear. It's a suplexia, suplexation.
Yeah.
I'm not a doctor.
So that's kind of what I was going to say. So on point one and point three, all I can say is like, it sounds like it's a lot better than they thought it could have been. You know, the not needing surgery thing, I can only assume that that's good. People were worried that it's like the same injury that Isaiah Thomas had. Apparently that's not true anymore. You know, in terms of him coming back and what his timeline is, you know, just because he's being obviously reevaluated in 8 weeks does not mean he's returning in 8.5 weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, they could be like, hey, you know, we're just going to shut him down for the year, give him, you know, 9 months to recover from the time that he originally went out. You know, my thing with him, obviously, you know, he gets drafted. Laz, I got to give you credit because you were one of, if not like the first person that I saw on the Killian train, if I'm not mistaken, like a while, maybe a year ago. Is that right?
Yes. It was like me and Tyler Moorman.
Yes.
Were like the only two people at first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give myself a little bit of credit because it was January 11th, I think, of last year that I was my first Halliburton to Detroit tweet. So that's not, and I'm not saying I wish we drafted Halliburton. I'm just saying like, at least I was right about a point guard early on, mm-hmm. you know, being good. But, you know, as far as the Killian thing goes, you know, he gets drafted and it's like maybe the, you know, as a general consensus, the happiest the Pistons fans have been about a pick. I honestly, I can't remember. Like, when was the last time you felt the reception for Killian that you did for another player?
That's a great question.
I couldn't give you an answer.
Like, people were kind of excited about Sekou, but like a lot of people hadn't seen him play.
Right.
And so that was tricky.
A lot of people, the people being afraid of foreign players was still kind of a thing. So
Yeah. And like there was a lot of none of the mock drafts had him falling to 15. So like I honestly like didn't do a super amount of research on Sekou because I thought he would be gone in the top 10. And, you know, I was trying to focus on guys I thought would be there at 15.
Yeah. Like he and Cam Johnson pretty much flipped.
Yeah.
But actually, Rui is the other one. Like the Wizards didn't meet with him and they were like, we're going to draft you though. And he was like, I don't know who you people are, but yeah.
Rui seems like a nice young man.
No, but he's great. Like I really do enjoy him. But on the Killian thing, you know, obviously everybody's super excited. Expectations were not being weathered whatsoever, including myself. Like I didn't help. I was one of the people that were like, you know, I tweeted several times like the Pistons have a guy who could win Rookie of the Year. Like that's how, you know, serious I was about how good he was going to be. I kept saying, you know, he's going to start fast. You know, coming out the gate, he's going to be amazing. Then he's going to hit a rookie wall, as they all do. By the end of the year, we're going to see what we have. Took me about a week before I was like, I'm going to give this guy until like year three for me to start making some actual like decisions on how I feel about him. I still love him unconditionally. I still full-heartedly believe that he can be everything that we want him to be. If he starts eliminating the sidesteps and the step backs, and just pulls up like a normal person, or actually, you know, takes a catch and shoot and like follows through with it, I'll be happy with that. If he can actually, you know, beat someone off the dribble, I'll be happy with that. I haven't questioned his passing ability. I don't like that he dribbles into chaos with no plan. And that's, you know, I think by year three, I have a longer leash than most people will, because people are already out on him because, you know, Pistons fans, but I'm not like worried about him. So in terms of like how I feel about his injury, I'm devastated. Those cursed Bucks always taking things from us. But I know he's going to be okay. You really realize that first game that Killian's not there. You're like, you realize how big of a percentage he was for the reason that you watch Pistons games.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, he's not out there and you're like, who am I excited to see tonight?
Like last week when D Rose was hurt and they were playing like Frank Jackson and Saben Lee.
Yeah.
It's like this was supposed to be my like 30 minutes a night of Killian, ahead of schedule.
And
it's just not happening.
And until that like 5 second window when Saben Lee tried to end Brook Lopez's career. I haven't gasped like that in an NBA game in I don't know how long. I think maybe since like Steph's OKC shot, I haven't gasped like that. And the ball, by the way, the shot didn't even go in. The dunk he missed, but it was like the audacity of him to rise up like that was like, okay.
It's like he thinks he can do that.
Yeah.
Like that's a good sign.
I love
nothing else.
Sure.
Yeah. But yeah, no. So the thing I feel bad with Killian is like, because I was first on the train and I was pretty loud about it, but I never thought he would. I thought he would come in right away and play differently, but I didn't think that he would be like a Rookie of the Year type. Gotcha. Only because I never thought he would play enough minutes to get Rookie of the Year, right? Like I thought the starting thing was nice, but like we knew D Rose was going to play like at least 25 minutes a night.
Sure.
And so I never thought that like he would, I never thought he would get to the counting stats basically to get to Rookie of the Year. The thing I was worried about the most with him was the shot, right? And it seemed like he had spent a lot of time during the offseason like fixing the catch and shoot and not like fixing the pull up.
Yeah.
But the pull up is what makes you special from a point guard prospect perspective. And so it's like, I understand why you did that. Like your first year, if you take and miss a bunch of pull up shots, like you're not going to play under Dwayne Casey. It's like, I get it. But yeah, that was really disappointing.
Yeah. And I mean, he's got a nice floater. I don't know what his percentage is on it.
this year.
He can get into the paint, right? Yeah. Like he's not like blowing past guys on the dribble, but like he can still get into the paint. Like you look at his like pretty meager shot chart for the year, and like a lot of those attempts, you know, 10-foot, 8-foot floaters are still in the paint. So he can get there. It's just like turning that into free throws, turning that into like opening up like passing lanes for the bigs, turning that into like layups that aren't with your left hand. Those are things that are going to need to come, which is why I'm a little bit worried about him missing a lot of time.
For sure.
Just because like it's early.
I think, I mean, you know, you being someone who was, you mentioned, first on the Killian train, does that mean, do you feel that you now have to be last off? Right? Like you were clamoring. I don't want to say clamoring because it makes you sound, you know, but you did say you were the loudest. So I guess for all intents and purposes, like, do you feel like because you were there first that you have to be sort of the one that turns off the lights, last to leave, God forbid, if it doesn't go the way that we think it is?
There is a little bit of that. There is a lot of like sunk cost fallacy happening like right now in my head. Like some like after the LaMelo near triple double, I had people like asking me if I would still take Killian over LaMelo. And my answer is like, A, like not up to the Pistons. That choice was not available to them.
Yeah.
And like B, like personally, like, yes, I would still do that. But like, I don't run the front office. So,
yeah, I mean, I think people have every right to do that with Halliburton. I really do. But, you know, the reality is that although that contingency was there, that pocket of people who wanted Halliburton was there. Matter of fact, on lottery night, when we find out that we have seven, I was thinking like, okay, it's probably going to be Halliburton because I thought Killian was going to go earlier. So I had convinced myself it was going to be Halliburton. I was going to be happy either way. I really desperately wanted Killian instead. I'm still not going to have buyer's remorse on Killian, right? Like Halliburton, I think, is probably going to win Rookie of the Year. He's a guy who I think he's probably the only player in this class, which, by the way, people said it was going to happen and I didn't believe them. We were wrong. This class is actually pretty good. These kids are good. All of them. Not all of them, but like we talked about how bad this draft class was. They're fun. Right. But I think Halliburton is the only player who can play with literally anybody and it's not going to matter.
Yeah. My thing with Halliburton is and was and is currently like you were drafting him to kind of like play off of your best guy.
Sure.
You're drafting him to like play off of Blake. You're drafting him to play off of Jeremy, which none of us thought was going to happen at the time. But like that's what would have ended up happening. And it's like the thought of Halliburton trying to play off Blake like now. The way people thought it was going to go. And so like, yeah, the upside play was always Killian, and that high in the draft, you do the upside play more often than you don't.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I want to get your thoughts on this. You know, we look at the draft that Troy Weaver had. Saban Lee is like, that's just Jordan Bone to me, but, in principle, they're not the same player. You get what I mean?
Yeah. 19-year-old Jordan Bone said 23-year-old Jordan Bone.
It blew my mind that Bruce Brown and Jordan Bone were on the floor together in the same game. Like Magic versus Nets, they were like guarding each other. I was in disbelief that that was a real thing that was happening. I couldn't believe it. But anyways, you look at the draft. Killian, Sadiq, Isaiah. Now, the Sadiq Bey thing is very bittersweet to me because, you know, at the time that the pick was made, I understood. Yeah, obviously
you have a lot of thoughts about that.
I still haven't gotten them all out, but because there's just so many. And, you know, at the time that the pick was made, I knew exactly who Sadiq Bey was and how massive it was that we were able to get him where we did. You know, the Isaiah Stewart one is the one that people questioned. Turns out that they were wrong so far. But do you think, because I think if you ask most people, they're going to say Sadiq Bey is the best rookie on this team. How long would you spend personally arguing that it's Isaiah Stewart?
Over Sadiq.
Yeah.
I mean, I would just show them the offensive rebounding numbers.
So does right? I mean, like, do you think that he is? I guess is another question to that.
I think, like, right now, I think Isaiah is the one with the clearest path to playing time. He is the one with the most distinct role. It's like his job is very simple. go out there, like rebound the basketball, prevent them from rebounding the basketball, like finish
end of around list. The yeah.
Yeah. And end of list. Right.
And then it's like also on there, like be more productive than Jahlil Okafor. Whereas Sadiq Bey is like, you got to be better than DeLon. You got to be better than Josh. You got to be better than Sfi. Like the list is longer. And obviously, as you mentioned, the task list, right? The to-do list for him. You know, James mentioned this the other day. Like he's tasked with defending really strong perimeter players, really strong wings. Like he had to guard Jaylen Brown. Right. Yeah. The offensive nightmare that is Jaylen Brown. That's a tough ask for Sadiq Bey.
That was the literal example I was going to use.
I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to.
No. The other thing was like they had him guarding Giannis on the perimeter.
Yeah.
And it's like, why are you doing that to this kid?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't deserve that.
Yeah.
Nobody deserves that. But yeah, I mean, because Stewart is the one with like the most clearly defined role, he's the one who's able to like fill it the best. And so, like, for now, that probably makes him the best rookie. You know, like 3 years from now, like who knows, right? But for now, yeah, absolutely. Stewart's the best rookie.
Do you think there's anything there with Servetus? I don't know if Eli listens to this show, so tread lightly.
I can handle Eli. I think there could be. I think it was worth the shot. At what was he, 37? Like if you find a 3-and-D wing at 37, like that's a great pick. So like, sure, it's absolutely worth the shot. The cheap shots from like John Hollinger about like how he's like 4 years away from being 4 years away in like the Lithuanian league is like sure, man, like whatever. But like if he's 6'8" and can shoot the crap out of the ball, like We've seen with Duncan Robinson that like if you're 6'8" and can shoot the crap out of the ball, that's extremely valuable, and like we can do stuff with that.
Yeah,
we've seen with like Joe Harris. Like Joe Harris was sort of considered a bust. Like he floated around the league before he like finally started to find his way, and like what turned his career around was like the ability to make shots.
Yeah,
and so it's like if this kid can make shots off movement, if he can make shots off the catch at a really high clip, then like that's a valuable player. That's when it's worth the look at 37.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't disagree at all. So I know how long your episodes usually run. So I'm assuming you're going to want to wrap up soon. So I'm going to ask you a question because I don't think you've released an episode since this news came out. I'm curious to know your thoughts on the Kevin Porter Jr. thing. Cause a lot of Pistons fans seem to think the answer is yes on him. I have very strong opinions on it though.
So I have heard things from people about the Kevin Porter Jr. thing.
Sure.
And it makes me cautious, but I do think there are definitely going to be some NBA teams who are interested. If you look at the way that Troy Weaver composes himself and is openly spoke about the way he wants the team to be composed,
yeah,
you like wouldn't even ask if the Pistons would go after Kevin Porter Jr.
Thank you.
You know that they wouldn't be interested in him.
It takes a very elementary level of understanding of literally what you just mentioned, of how this team is being structured, to understand that it is a fundamentally bad idea. And I have very strong opinions on this. Maybe this is mean to do. I'm going to give my full thoughts on the Bun and Cardigan show releasing this Friday. and James is going to... I'm going to
ask you to plug your stuff, right?
I mainly want to bring it up because I think James's insight is going to... I imagine it's going to mirror pretty much exactly what you said, and we all kind of agree. I just know that the Lakers are going to get him, and then Rob Pelinka is going to win Exec of the Year. Like, it's going to happen.
Wouldn't you know, the thing would be you go to Portland because that's closer to home, right? You're like, he's a Seattle kid.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, and he's got familial environment or whatever.
It worked for Josh, right?
Yeah.
Like it worked for my favorite thing. My favorite quote maybe of the season was, I don't remember who asked it, but they were like, hey, Josh, like we are a few weeks into the season. Like Josh has been playing really well. And they're like, so you're home now. Like, is this, you know, contributing to why you've been playing so well? And he goes, yeah, man, like I come home from practice and like my mom like makes me lunch. Like that's, and I'm like, that's awesome. Like that's, first of all, that's actually pretty adorable. Like just knowing that like you just go home from like NBA practice. Your mom just makes you lunch, and you know, it's turned him into a better basketball player. And the sort of reinstatement, I guess, program that he was going through in Memphis clearly has helped him a lot. Felt like it was going the right way for Kevin Porter Jr., who I sincerely hope, you know, he ends up being okay, because it devastates me. But, you know, and I never want it to sound like we're being like the, you know, hey, we tried to tell you about the character issues thing. Like, that's not obviously what I'm trying to do.
No one was hoping like this would be the case.
But
right?
No, not at all. But it is sort of like a, well, you know, like we, you know, but again, like some of the things that he had posted on Instagram a few months ago were like really saddening and troubling. And he just kind of keeps finding himself in these situations that are just unfortunate, and they just devastate you. As a basketball player, the talent's there. I think Kobe Altman has done a tremendous job sort of accumulating these guys over the last few years with Jetty and Windler, and, you know, KPJ and Sexton and Garland and
Okoro.
And oh my God, Isaac Okoro. I love him so much.
The Cavs are building like along the same track as what the Pistons are trying to build with character concerns, with defensive mindset, like a know your role type of situation. And we're seeing for them, like their vets are better than our vets. So it's having more success.
Yeah. No, I have never thought of it this way. Like the way that you're laying it out, you are 1000% right. Like that is absolutely the case. Watching them not under John Beilein makes me happy, because they actually run plays. And believe it or not, I think that that's actually some productive basketball. It's counterintuitive to run a basketball team the way that John Beilein ran the Cavs. That's another story I have. I don't want to get in trouble. I can't tell that on here. But watching that Cavs team, you know, I watch Isaac Okoro. The guy defends like he has four arms. It's insane. It's absolute insanity. You know, you wouldn't think that you'd get as much enjoyment out of them as you can, but I love them.
They are an extremely funky team to watch. The NBA is tough, right? Because a lot of teams play very similar styles of basketball, right? It's get paint touches, use those paint touches to create open looks from three, rinse, repeat, right? And then you get teams that just like play like way, way differently than everybody else. Cavs play like a real funky style of basketball. Like the last year's version of the Pacers under Nate McMillan.
Sure.
They played a really funky style of basketball. It was inefficient, but it was still like a breath of like weird air, because it was just so much different than what everybody else in the league was doing. The Raptors, because like Nick Nurse thinks he's like God's gift to coaching, and he won a championship in his first year, so you can't tell him anything. He's just willing to try a bunch of like weird stuff. And like now Chris Boucher is like a sixth man of the year candidate. Yeah. And it's just a different watch than a lot of other NBA teams.
Sure. And Stanley turned into the reclamation project of the ages, which is, I think if it happened 2 years earlier, it would have been infuriating. But I think we're at a point where it's like, all right, I'm happy for him. Like, whatever. Yeah. It's okay.
No, I'm happy for him. I think he and like OG just like fuse bodies at halftime. And like they unfuse, and like the talent like balances out between them.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, like we have a shared pool of like 48 minutes of talent tonight. Like, how do we use this?
Sure.
That's how that goes.
Yeah. You know, you brought up the Pacers. I just want to add this. Why aren't people talking about the absolute buzzsaw that they're going to be in the playoffs this year? Look at that roster top to bottom. You got Malcolm Brogdon, who's playing like an MVP candidate. You have Sabonis, who's one of the best big men in the league, right? Has probably a Malcolm Brogdon, DeMontis Sabonis pick and roll is arguably the best in the league. They can also pick and pop. They have the Holiday twins. They have TJ McConnell, right? He's still there. Yeah, no, I was thinking of TJ Leaf. That's why it was confusing me.
TJ Leaf, not there anymore.
Yeah, TJ, that's why I was confused. I'm totally blanking on everybody now. Caris LeVert, TJ Warren, when he gets back, which to me, Caris and TJ Warren is just, you have two TJ Warrens. That's just all that, which is not a bad thing, by the way. That's amazing. I just feel like they have so much scoring that, like, imagine what's Indiana going to be, a five seed? Imagine that in the second round, like Brooklyn versus Indiana. I mean, those games are going to be like 130 point affairs.
I know, like, if I was like Boston, I would be scared to death to play them. Not because like I don't think I can beat them, but because like they're gonna make this 7-game series like miserable,
they're gonna wear you out. Yeah, I think defensively, I trust Jalen. And honestly, are you as excited about those two as I am, Tatum and Brown?
The Jays?
Yeah, like for the next like 10 years of basketball. Are you kidding me?
I was so wrong on Tatum.
I don't know that
I thought he was just Tobias Harris, and like now he like he was Tobias Harris's rookie year, yeah. And like now he's like better, and it's like so wrong.
I said this a few weeks ago. It was because we played the Celtics back to back, I think. So it was the game that we won, which was the first one. That's right, because it was the second game that Jason Tatum hit the game winner from the left elbow. Mm-hmm. So it was the first game that we won, and I said, bring me Bill Simmons' head on a platter. That I pointed this out because I say it all the time. Jason Tatum's dribble is terrible. Like, usually someone will send the ball back down to the floor around their hip, right? If not lower. Nah. Like, Tatum lets that thing right up to his chest, and then he puts it back down, and somehow he protects it super well and never gets swiped. I do not understand it at all, but I just... Him and Brandon Ingram just became offensive nightmares overnight, and then Jaylen Brown was just also like, me too. I can hit any shot from anywhere on the floor.
Man, I thought for sure that, like, Josh Jackson was going to be better than Jason Tatum.
Oof.
Yeah, it was... That's a miss on my part. But hey, like, you know, I'm happy with how that ended out, all things considered, right? Like, Josh is here now. Like, that's sure. pretty much all I've ever wanted since he was in high school.
I tried desperately to get Luke to recruit Jason Tatum. But he was very good, believe it or not. I'm not even saying this to be nice. He was very good about not tampering. I said, because I you knew how big I was on the Harry Giles thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Which to this day, I...
That's right, Duke connection. I never made that connection.
There you go. The gears are spinning for you as they did for me, friend. Because I'm sitting there. We were literally just like playing video games. And I said to him, I go, because him and I really enjoy his cousin, AJ. Him and I are friends too. So I was just talking to him because he asked me who we should get in free agency. I go, well, Harry Giles is like my number one. Like, it's not close. And Luke said something. I go, oh my God, you guys went to Duke. He goes, we did. I go, I need you to, because at the time Troy wasn't a thing. I go, mm-hmm. I need you to call Ed and like make this happen. And he like laughed and said something. I go, wait a minute. I go, Luke, you know who else you played with at Duke? And he goes, who? And it's really a who's who. Like, it's a dartboard of amazing names. But I go, you played with Jason Tatum. So do you mean to tell me that Jason Tatum is coming to Detroit? And he like, he just kind of like shrugged it off and he laughed. So I did try. Pistons fans, guys, I tried. I tried to get Tatum and Harry Giles to Detroit. I'm sorry that neither of those turned out. And yeah, Luke's not even here anymore, by the way.
Yeah, the lure of the 5-year max contract extension, just too much for Jason. That's Nicholas Henkel, thank you so much for recording this with me. We're going to have to do this again for sure. Have people, in case people already forgot the name of the podcast, do you want to tell it to them one more time?
Yeah. So the name of the show, launched by myself and James Edwards this last Monday, is called The Bun and Cardigan Show. We are available on Apple Podcast and Spotify. We will be dropping episodes every Monday and Friday. Yeah, it's a great show. I think we're going to have a lot of really good guests lined up in the future. Laz will also be on there eventually. I don't know when, but I did talk to James about this, and I'm not just saying this to be nice to you, Laz, because I know I mentioned this before we started recording. I'm dead serious. You'll be on the show. Don't worry.
All right. I feel no pressure, right? Like that's really all I can ask for. of course, everyone still listening to this podcast can follow me on Twitter at Last Chance. That's at LazChance. You can listen to my other podcast, the Detroit Bad Boys podcast, on the same podcast platform you are listening to this podcast on. This podcast is the Pistons versus Everybody podcast, and we will talk to you guys next week. See ya.